Blog Talk Radio.
United, everybody. Wednesday night, our midweek show. I'm Jamie.
I'm Jerry, and thank God for that. How you doing?
Good. So you're in the middle. Is it still actively snowstorming there?
I think it's finally dying down. I mean, we just got this like burst of we had some sort of mixture early this morning, and then that stopped, and then like around 4 o'clock, you know, we started with heavy snow.
Yeah.
And that went from, like, I think it ended. It's just about, it's ending or it's going to end any minute. But, yeah, it's done quite a number, like, the Virginia, Maryland, D.C., like, the whole, like, up the whole East Coast. I think it's going to, everyone's without power around here, though. Like, there are 200,000 people without power.
Yeah, so you're powerless right now.
Yeah, I'm powerless. So I'm not in the chat room, so hello to everyone in the chat room.
Yeah, it's so packed in there right now. Too. It's a shame. So, outside of that, your power went out today, right?
Yeah, we went out like 2 hours ago, two or three hours ago. So,
okay.
You know.
So, have you seen anything since Sunday
when
we last did the show?
California Cation and the State of the Union speech. I haven't gotten a chance. We keep meaning to go see the Peter Weir movie, The Way Back, but I don't know when that's going to happen now. So.
Oh, that's playing near you, The Way Back?
Yeah, that is playing. Well, it's playing. It had what you would call a big wide release, but like 698 theaters, I think, is playing and on screens at least, well over 600, 700 screens. And not many people are going to see it, but I think it's going to be playing into next week, so we'll try, like, next week to go see it, I think.
It hasn't been getting good reviews for a Peter Weir film. It hasn't been getting great notices.
Okay, I haven't seen a review yet, so it hasn't gotten good reviews.
It's tepid.
Tepid, okay. Well, that might explain a lot.
Yeah, and I very rarely use that word tepid. You know,
yeah, I know.
Much,
I mean,
yeah, that's great. That's like a $12 word right there.
There you go. That's for all you kids taking the SATs. You know, we're helping you out.
Yeah.
So.
Tepid is synonymous with The Way Back. That's what you'll mark on your SAT. I don't know. I love Peter Weir, man.
Yeah,
I do.
So.
You know, I am so ashamed to say I've never seen his earliest stuff. Picnic at Hanging Rock. I've never seen that.
If you do, get a chance. It's quite a scary flick. So yeah,
The Last Wave?
That's another one. Yeah, that's another
yeah.
one. Those are great. Yeah, you can probably get them Netflix Instant because Criterion, like all Criterion's on Netflix Instant. So you can probably.
Yeah. Man, I'm not with that. I'm not with the whole streaming from the computer to the TV.
Yeah, I know, dude. It's, yeah, well, I am with it, but not tonight.
I think I picked up on Peter Weir around Year of Living Dangerously time. And
well,
I followed him since.
That's an awesome film to pick up with. I mean, that's such a great film.
He's like in many ways kind of, well, I don't know. He's very like sensuous kind of tactile director in terms
mm-hmm.
of mood.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the feeling of his film, they're like thick with atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. That's a good word to describe it, yeah.
He's like the Australian Michael Mann. He's Australian, right?
I believe so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, just go with me on this.
I'm going with you, dude. I'm going.
Speaking of the Australian Michael Mann, which isn't a segue at all for this next segment, our guest tonight is Margot Kidder.
That's what I think of when I think of Australia for Australia
yeah,
Day.
Right. And Margot Kidder, we all know and love her for the Superman films, mm-hmm. which is what she's most widely known for. But also on this show, related to Movie Geeks United, we love her for her early work with De Palma,
mm-hmm.
Sisters,
mm-hmm,
you know, the
right.
first big foray into the thriller genre for De Palma. And we tried to get her for that series that we did on Sisters and the De Palma Thrillers,
right.
but she was unavailable, but we got her now. That's all that matters.
Cool. That is.
She's got a new movie. It's opening on Blu-ray and DVD, or actually DVD, on February 15th, the day after Valentine's Day. And this is a perfect gift for Valentine's Day. It's called Love at First Kill, and she plays this mother with kind of attachment issues with her son, and she
mm-hmm.
will kind of stop at nothing to keep her son from running off with the new girlfriend he meets next door. A girl moves in next door, and they kind of strike up some kind of relationship, and the overbearing mother kind of loses it.
Mm-hmm.
And Margot Kidder's really good in it, really colorful. And it's directed, this is very interesting, the movie is directed by John Daly. It's kind of, I think it's a first time, it's a directorial debut for John Daly. And John
mm-hmm.
Daly has been in the business for a long time, but as a producer.
Right, right.
And his producing credits include Platoon, The Terminator, The Last Emperor.
Wow. That's
Robert
Altman's
resume. Images, yeah, yeah. So he comes, it's quite a pedigreed film between the two of them. And so we got a chance to sit down with Margot Kidder, our home entertainment correspondent, Arenada Diaz did. And he asked her about the new project, Love at First Kill. And he threw in a question about working with De Palma on the film Sisters. So sit back, enjoy. Here is Margot Kidder.
After all these years of film mistress, no one really knows how that young girl died. They say she drowned in 4 inches of water.
A small town with a mysterious past. A young man.
Why don't we go over to the bar and have a couple of beers?
You know, I gotta take care of my mom.
Living a quiet life. A stranger.
Hi, I'm Marie. I'm your new neighbor.
Looking for a fresh start.
Do you have a husband?
Separated. He's probably searching for me.
A mother.
She wants Harry.
Aren't they soft?
They're beautiful.
She's not good enough for Harry.
Who would do anything to protect her son.
You are in serious danger here.
Whoa! Whoa! All right.
Some people are very jealous. And when they're jealous, they're dangerous.
I have painted you a box.
It's beautiful. What's inside the box?
Our future.
I'm so lucky to have you.
She's no good, Harry.
I don't want anything to happen to her.
What are you seeing? I see trouble. You have to stop her once and for all.
Got to get rid of her.
When she goes, I go.
Nobody takes my son.
I'll start with the obvious. How did this project come to you?
Well, the way they usually do, someone sent a script to my agent who sent it on to me and said, read this, here's where they shoot, when they shoot, are you available, and do you like the part? And I found the character to be so wonderfully multi-layered and complex, a woman my age who's obsessively hanging on to her son and can't let go to the point where it becomes very destructive for him and for her and for everyone involved, and who can't banish the past from her mind. And so it looked like a delicious challenge. I knew the work of the director, or at least I knew his producing work, and he had a fabulous reputation as a producer. And I got to go to Winnipeg, which is one of my favorite quirky towns in Canada because it's got a wonderful theater scene and it's filled with delicious eccentrics, and it was sort of irresistible all around.
I'm just curious about connections or empathy that maybe you were able to bring to this character.
Well, I don't think you you should be playing a character if you don't have any empathy for them. I mean, we should all be having empathy for all of our fellow men and women. There are very few people that are either pure evil or pure good. We're usually all of us, a mixture of various shades of gray on the white to black scale, if you know what I mean. And mm-hmm. so was she. And so she'd had some tragedies in her past that brought her to the that she'd not been able to deal with or banish from her psyche, that brought her to the point where she is when we see her, when we first see her in the movie, which is basically clinging on to this son and hating his girlfriend. And I think it's a not uncommon scenario. I didn't have a son, and one's relationship with one's daughter is always really different. So that her dilemma was not something that I'd ever experienced, but you know, that's the fun of acting.
Right, right. Well, and you mentioned John Daly, who directed this. And, you know, so he's directing, but you, obviously everyone knows from his producing credits. And did you know personally? Did you know John Daly before this?
You know, it turned out we compared notes, and we'd met in the 70s in England when everything was pretty wild, and there are a lot of the memories of the 70s that a lot of us can't bring back. But we'd met at a couple of parties and bumped into each other here and there. But it was all kind of vague, and I, of course, knew who he was, and he knew who I was. And it's a pretty small world, you know, or it was smaller than it used to be. And so, but I didn't know what he'd be like as a director, and I adored him as a director. He was very hands-off in a certain way, but if you weren't doing what he wanted, he let you know. And he had that delicious, dry British wit that just kept me, at any rate, in stitches all the time. I think young Noah had a different experience of it because he was a very American young man and hadn't traveled extensively and hadn't spent a lot of time in England, and I think often didn't get when John was being dry and British and thought he was being put down. But he got it towards the end.
And you said, you know, he was, you know, he would tell you what he wanted when that would come up, but
yeah.
A lot of times he was, you know, kind of a hands-off director.
Well, we would have rehearsals with ourselves, the actors, the night before, and figure out where we're going. And I hired a wonderful acting coach up there who was very helpful to Noah and me and Adriana and all the actors. And so when you presented what you thought was going on to him, if it fit into his vision, he went with it without much fuss and ado. If it didn't, he let you know very specifically why it didn't.
Well, and I'm curious, and I don't know if maybe if people have pointed this out to you or if you've thought about this or are aware of this, but from time to time you really get kind of tied up or associated with projects that would fall into kind of the horror suspense genre.
I certainly have. I was a scream queen when I was young before Superman, and then now I seem to be doing a ton of these again. So it's sort of fun.
This all goes back, I mean, obviously this all goes back to Sisters, but, you know, I came of age, you know, in the 80s. I remember a great episode you did of the HBO series, The Hitchhiker.
Goodness. Yeah, that was fun. You know who directed that? Philip Noyce, who's gone on to become a really top-notch director.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was the director. He was great.
Well, I'm curious what personally for you, what is your connection to kind of this horror genre that always comes back to you?
Honestly, it's simply what gets offered to me. It's not my favorite genre by any stretch of the imagination. So I like them when they have a sense of humor to them, and if they don't have a sense of humor, I try and stick one in.
Right.
A little wicked look here, a little lengthy audience there. I think horror movie audiences are a lot more savvy than a lot of producers think.
Well,
and they know they're going to get a few laughs with their terror roller coaster.
Well, I'll ask you one last question because I know you're on a schedule.
Okay.
Here, I'll ask, and it is going back to, I guess, kind of where you started for a lot of us, which was in De Palma's Sisters. We've done like 6-7 shows tribute to both De Palma and his films in particular.
Have you really? That's wonderful. He was my boyfriend, for starters, and I was head over heels in love with him. And Jennifer Salt, who played Grace Collier, was and remains best friend. She was my best friend. So And Amy Robinson, who went on to become a very successful producer, Ed Pressman, who produced it, I think it was his second attempt, went on to become very professional. We were all just kids playing Let's Make a Movie and having the time of our lives and yet being very serious about filmmaking. So it was magic. And nowadays when these young directors, independent directors, ask me to come and be on their, you know, have a little part in their movies, I tell you, I get a feel for that. And you don't get that feel on those huge budget movies where the budget's the size of small countries, which is something of an obscenity, if you ask me. You get it on these young, independent film shoots. And these kids in their 20s who have bucked all the odds and scraped enough money together to make something are absolutely my favorite people to work with, bar none. There's an enthusiasm, an idealism, a we're going to get this done despite the odds kind of spirit that is so evocative of my youth. So they're my favorite people to work with.
All righty, that is Margot Kidder. The movie is Love at First Kill. It comes out on DVD February 15th. You can purchase it here from our show page. Click on the front cover icon of that DVD, Love at First Kill. It'll take you to Amazon where you can buy it, snatch it up. Thank you, Margot, for your time.
Thank you, Margot. No, that was good. I liked it. It was very short, though. It was much shorter.
I love the way you said that. Yeah. It's one of these press junket things,
mm-hmm.
man, you know. She was, I think she was doing it from home, but, I mean, they had her on a tight schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Not Monday. What day is it? Is it Wednesday? Yeah, okay. This Sunday, we have our Oscar Prediction Roundtable, just to remind the listeners out there, which is usually one of our favorite, most popular shows every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of a roundtable prediction of each of the Oscar categories. And then next Wednesday from the movie Let Me In, which releases on DVD the day prior on February 1st,
mm-hmm.
we have director Matt Reeves, actor Cody Smit-McPhee, and actor, Oscar-nominated actor, Richard Jenkins, all
right.
from that film. So
mm-hmm.
they'll be with us. And then the week leading up to Oscar, we'll have our Oscar series where we speak to various nominees. The one that we've done so far is Charles Ferguson, who was nominated for his documentary film Inside Job.
Oh, cool.
He'll be airing that week. Let's bring on Dean. Dean's on the phone here. Hey.
You have reached the maximum time permitted to record. To send your message, press
okay.
1 at any time. To listen
that?
To your message, press 2.
What is that?
To re-record, press 3. For more options,
is that? Do you hear that
4.
On my phone?
To cancel, press
5. Oh, hang on. Hang on. I think I know what's wrong. Hang
what
on.
Happened?
To send your message,
I have no
press
idea.
1 at any time.
Well, let me
to
press 1.
To listen to your message, press 2. Message sent. Thank you for calling. Goodbye.
What was that?
I have no idea.
Let's
bring
on
Dean. Hey, Dean, you're on
Dean,
now.
Did you bring that with you, Dean? Was that something that you brought from Voodoo?
That's my standard introduction from now on.
Wow.
Great. I can see you getting very popular with that.
I have no idea what
yeah.
that just was.
Yeah, I have no idea. That's just very scary.
Anyway.
I was disappointed that they didn't talk about Black Christmas with Margot Kidder. I was expecting at least a mention of Black Christmas, which is her great.
Well, with the limited amount of time that we had, we preferred to ask about De Palma.
Yeah,
because,
we're like, Black
yeah.
Christmas. Well, why don't you call up Ms. Kidder and talk to her about Black Christmas, okay?
Black Christmas is the greatest slasher movie that's ever been made. It's better than John Carpenter's Halloween, in my opinion.
Wow.
There are a lot of people who actually feel that way, Dean. So
strong words. Strong words.
I think it's the one that started it all, and it was certainly the.
So we have that movie
that,
to blame for it. Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
I thought it was
actually.
Joseph Mengele's home movies, but I, as always, I'm wrong.
All right. I was talking about what was I talking about?
Oscar.
Inside Job.
Oh,
yeah.
Inside
Job being nominated for Best Documentary. Charles Ferguson, the director of Inside Job. By the way, if anyone else wants to join us to speak to any of the topics we're discussing in tonight's roundtable, you can give us a call at 718-508-9477. It only charges $3.99 a minute. So the one of the snubs that people are talking about, because since we're predicting the winners on Sunday night, we'll talk about snubs now.
That's good. I like that. That's a good topic.
Takes
Can
place
I be part of the round table
no.
on Sunday? No.
No, you may not.
No.
So one of the
I'm
snubs takes
anyway.
Place on in the documentary category, which the snub, according to a lot of people that scratch their heads on this, was Waiting for Superman's absence from that category.
Yeah, you know what? I could have predicted that, and I'll tell you why. That movie looks like a big old – I haven't even bothered with that movie, and I'll tell you why, because it looks like a big old – even though I really appreciate the subject matter, and I – yes, education, yeah, it should be good and everything. But as a movie, it looks like a big old – puffy marshmallow.
Okay.
Okay.
Does that require
like,
more?
It just looks like a big old soft marshmallow that doesn't have any center to it, really. And that
That's not true.
Okay. Well, that's what it looks like
to
me.
A lot of friends who are teachers who saw that movie. I mean, the only thing you can really say, the only criticism they had of the film is it just doesn't go far enough. But at least it brings it out there to the forefront.
But that's what I'm saying, Jerry, is that it doesn't go far enough.
What do you want
to
show
like
off?
That.
What do you want show off of the goddamn education? You want like a 15-hour? What do you want for Lynn Alexander plot?
Waiting for show off.
In the state that the education system is at this moment in this country, yes, I want show off.
You want showing? Great. I can just see it now.
Well, here it is. You know what, though? I mean, education is on the forefront. I mean, a large percentage of Obama's State of the Union last night dealt with education,
right?
As every State of the Union ever made does. It seems like we're talking about the same stuff every single State of the Union. I mean, it is on the forefront. It's one of these big issues, as is the global financial crisis, as is the war in Afghanistan, which those topics have been covered in the nominated documentaries.
Yeah,
so,
it's very topical this year, much more than I think it's really, because the Academy isn't always known for its topicality. And I think this year it's really incredible how topical they are. They're not always ahead of the curve. They're usually a couple years late. But this year, with Inside Job and Restrepo, it's like, oh, my God.
The snub
Davis.
Can I host the show?
Thank you. Please let Jamie host the show. Thank you.
The snub to Davis Guggenheim's film, Waiting for Superman, according to a Washington Post journalist, was well-deserved, given that classic documentaries are factual and straightforward and don't, as in Superman's case, fake scenes for emotional impact. Though Superman was on the shortlist for an Academy Award, apparently the people who vote on the nominations, people who actually make documentaries, saw too many problems with Waiting for Superman. Guggenheim edited the film to make it seem as if charter schools are a systematic answer to the ills afflicting many traditional public schools, even though they can't be by their very design.
That's a good point.
He unfairly demonized the president of the American Federation of Teachers and gave undeserved hero status to former D.C. school chancellor Michelle Ray.
Problem with the film,
Guggenheim compared schools in Finland and the United States without mentioning that Finland has a 3% child poverty rate and the United States has a 22% rate, which you can argue that poor education is the reason that we do have such a high child poverty rate.
That's an interesting, thank you for bringing that up, Jamie. That's a good point. No, I mean, like I said, the film scratches the surface, but it is, if, you know, this reminds me of the interviews they had with the documentarians in the movie about Michael Moore, Manufacturing Dissent, I believe it was called.
Well, that's not about Michael Moore. That's about Noam Chomsky.
Oh, no, okay, what's the one about...
The one about Fahrenheit?
Not the one about Fahrenheit. The one that came out a couple of years ago, it premiered at South by Southwest.
Because?
No, Manufacturing Dissent is about, you're right, it's about Chomsky, but there's another one. about Michael Porter.
I saw the one that Ron Silver was in, and he was like a big talking.
No. This is a different one. This was made by liberal Canadians.
Wow. And, are there any other kind?
Yeah, I know, really. But you know what I mean? I'm just saying, I know which one you're talking about, and it's not that one. But they were a lot of the criticism, like the documentarians have of Michael Moore, is that he puts himself in the documentary, and what you're saying reminds me of that with the documentarians having the people voted in this category have a lot of problems with the way that Guggenheim made his film. So, no, just that's what I'm saying.
Kitten Fist in the chat room actually has a good point. You know, exit through the gift shop. I mean, you could argue that there's a lot of fakery going on there,
but it's not.
Would exit through the gift shop be coined as kind of like an issue film where facts are essential?
Yes.
More like an exciting sideshow kind of freak show, almost.
That's it exactly. I mean, with exit to the gift shop, the deviations from the documentary norm become part of the art in and of itself, and become part of the piece in and of itself. So for that reason alone, although I still maintain that, like, seeing Exit from the Gift Shop in the five nominees is a surprise.
It's a big surprise.
Yeah.
I did not
think it's a surprise
that
for that reason.
I'm glad they
included it.
I think it's one of the most talked about of the year, and in that sense, I kind of expected it.
Mm-hmm. I didn't expect
but,
it, though. I was surprised.
I was expecting it to be left out.
What I wasn't expecting is Gasland, and I guess Gasland took over Waiting for Superman's spot.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Gasland. It premiered on HBO.
Yes.
I mean, it's good.
I like that. It's good.
You know, the thing about Gasland that I think earned its Oscar nomination was not necessarily the quality of the movie, which I thought it was just like a B plus movie. But I think what got it its nomination is the illumination of this particular issue, which is something that needs to be looked at,
and it's environmental, and that's very, that's very pressing now, I guess. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's all.
I mean, I the thing about Gasland that I didn't like, which I don't like this trend that's going on in documentaries, this trend that Michael Moore, started this trend of like putting the documentary's filmmaker into the movie. I felt like Gasland had a little bit too much of that. So, but that's just the way documentaries are going. Now, has anybody seen Wasteland?
No, I have not seen Wasteland.
I think that's the thing that stole Waiting for Superman's spot.
I think Lois Lane stole Waiting for Superman's spot, but okay, never mind.
That is true. We went from Lois Lane to Waiting for Superman. It's very crafty.
I'm trying, baby.
Other snubs.
Tell Kitten Fist I said hello, by the way.
I will. Kitten Fist, Jerry says hello. So the other snubs. Now, we're talking about Inception. I think it got something like 8 nominations.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest snub of the nominations this year was apparently, in a lot of people's minds, Nolan's passing as director he didn't get a Best Director nom, and everybody say, what does he have to do, to get a Best Director?
Chris had a good theory on it when we were talking yesterday on Facebook in the comments. I mean, for some reason, I left a link to the Wraps list of the nominations, and that for some reason sparked a very active thread for the whole day on my page. But Chris brought up his rationale for why he wasn't nominated was very good.
You want to share it?
Well, he said it was Scorsese wasn't. Was it that Scorsese wasn't nominated for Taxi Driver? Was that the or I'm trying to some famous guy in Spielberg for Jaws? He was like saying those would be far bigger snubs.
Who do you think he was snubbed in favor of? The Coen brothers?
I think either the Coen brothers or David O. Russell, to be very honest with you.
Yeah, David O. Russell.
Well, I mean, the Coen brothers.
But they're all deserving.
The
That's the thing. I think they're all deserving.
But
That's
the Coen brothers were not. The Coen brothers were not part of the DGA five. So, you know, I think the Coen brothers stole his spot. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty obvious.
I don't think they deliberately stole it. I don't think they had that.
No.
Well, of course not. But you know what I'm saying.
No, I know what you're saying.
Coen brothers actually came out with a statement and they said, look. We feel bad about having so many nominations for True Grit. We didn't expect it. You should give them to somebody else. Yeah, they actually said that.
They're good.
Wow.
They got class. I like those guys. They got a lot.
And I love
class.
It how people. I've gotten responses on my Facebook that say the Coen brothers are, you know, they should give back the nominations, and they have no business, and it's the studios
that
can't pay for this stuff, you know?
That I don't get. It's a good film. It's a really good film. I don't get that. That I don't get. But look, the Nolan snub, let me ask you this. Okay, let's say it's obviously not going to happen now, but do you think they might give – he could get nominated for The Dark Knight Rises, or is that out of the question?
That's not going to happen.
Okay, I just thought like a la Peter Jackson kind of for Return of the King.
Like, I can't. I don't have a crystal ball for like
a year
and a half.
No, I'm just asking. It's just a hypothetical thing. Just
And nobody knows.
Yeah.
I mean, if anyone asked, would he be in the running for The Dark Knight, people would have said no freaking way.
No way.
I'm doing the same thing.
No, in one sense, because you have you have Aronofsky and Fincher, and, you know, it would have been awesome to see this Nolan up there, too, because I consider them all part of the same. These that have their own
and David O. Russell.
David O. Russell and Fincher, obviously, being the rebels in the back lot of the Sharon Waxman's book, and then Aronofsky comes a little bit later, and Nolan also, you know, in the 21st century, and it would have been awesome to see Nolan up there, because you would just have this cemented thing of these brand new turn of the century auteurs up for all up for Oscars, and it is a shame that Nolan is not on there, though. I don't know what he has to do. I do think it's a snub. I really do. A very glaring one, but what can you do?
You know what? You know, my explanation of it is that it's really a not so much a snub of Nolan as it is an expression of love towards the Coens, because the Coens, despite all of their success and despite the fact that every one of their movies we all have to go out and go see, the Coens themselves have only been nominated one time before, and of course won for the for No Country for Old Men,
mm-hmm.
and before that. The only nomination that the team got for Best Director was for Joel himself for Fargo back in 1996. So they have been doing movies now for 25 years that are every single one of them you have to go out and go see. If you don't go out and go see them, then you're behind the curve.
But obviously,
so,
a lot of people didn't go out and see them.
Well, you know, I mean, they've been seen by now.
Oh, they've
sure.
been seen
I
by
mean,
now, but I
they've
mean,
been
saying,
seen by now.
Remember, the Big Lebowski was a financial dud. That really made it. You know, that became very
it
popular
was.
On home video.
It
the,
was,
the man
but
wasn't
I think,
there. The
but,
serious
but this,
man.
But this nomination is a way of sort of saying, you know, we know you're. Two of the greatest filmmakers that we have to that this country has to offer, or the entire film industry has to offer. And even though True Grit, which by the way I still have not seen, but even though True Grit might not be their greatest movie or whatever, I think that this entire love of True Grit that's come out in these 10 nominations. I think it's 10 nominations that they got. I think that's a symbol of them saying, you know what, we know that you guys are really at the forefront of making movies. Yes, there's this new generation coming up, but you guys really are at the forefront of making movies. You're two of the greatest filmmakers out there. And so,
look, I don't quite
travels instead of True Grit, Dean?
I don't quite like. I mean, I like True Grit. I just like it. I don't put it on
cool.
my best list.
No.
But I don't have a problem with Nolan being overlooked for best director. I mean, it is curious. It would have been nice to have seen him up for best director,
mm-hmm.
but I think he's up for the right categories. I mean,
I think
he'll get original screenplay. I think he'll get an original screenplay.
Because
original screenplay.
What everybody talks about with Inception isn't necessarily the direction. It's the idea. It's what was that movie? It's the writing. I mean,
yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah, I think it will get that. I think it will. I think he will get that, and I think Sorkin will get adapted. I think that's how it's going to go down.
And plus, he's up for the biggest award of all. He's up for Best Picture.
Yeah.
I mean, it won't, but if it did win Best Picture, he'd get the big award of the night because
mm-hmm.
he's one of the producers.
That's
so,
it.
I mean, come on. It's got 8 nominations, as Chris says here in the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Kitten Fist. So, I mean, it's one of the biggest movies of the year. It's
mm-hmm.
an original idea
that
beyond
well.
Performed beyond anyone's wildest dreams. It is a mega hit. That is great consolation for not getting a Best Director nomination.
Yeah, and he did get 2 nominations out of it. So,
and what was the complaint about Inception? Across the board, other than the people that said, oh, I don't understand it, the complaint about Inception was the same complaint about The Dark Knight that I read in many reviews that said the direction of action is a little muddled and difficult to follow.
Interesting. Very good. Very good. Yeah. Very, very true. Very true. And
I gotta admit, I mean, some of that ski chase thing, I see
looks
that.
Like a, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right, Jamie. You're absolutely right about that. And I'll tell you another thing. I don't think that it's going to win. I don't think that Nolan's going to walk away with an Oscar this year because I don't think that he's going to win the original screenplay thing. I think that's going to go to The King's Speech. And
that's true.
I'll tell you the reason why I say that, because the second other complaint about Inception this year was that the screenplay, that is the dialogue, is too filled, too much filled, and necessarily so. I admit it, but it is filled with a lot of exposition.
Well, you have a character
and,
that is essentially exposition. The Ellen Page
yes.
character is there to explain to us what the fuck's going on.
And I don't think that that's something that I think that the screenwriters recognize why it needs to be there, but I don't think that it's something that they're going to reward with an Oscar.
Well, I don't know. Like Jamie said, I don't have a crystal ball, so I don't know. But I will say this though,
But we're all going to pretend like we do on Sunday.
Yeah, we are going to pretend we do. But even with that exposition, I didn't find that a problem. And when you go back, let me say the greatest thing you can say about a film is that you can go back and watch it, and it means something different every time you watch it. And Inception is one of those films that means something completely different to me every time I go back and watch it, which has been many times.
This is true, but I have a question. Is this because of the writing or is it because of the direction?
Both, and a lot more other things too, the performances. I have to say this about Nolan. You want to talk about a great director, he manages to get performance out of his actors in each film. I'm talking about from Following on. That are absolutely astounding that you don't see these actors give in other films. I think Ellen Page deserves something for going against type in a big way and doing very well.
I thought that Ellen Page had a very difficult role.
And she did it quite well, I thought.
Yes, she did.
I mean, I thought the performances in this were top-notch. So, I don't know.
Who else was snubbed?
Let's talk about the snubs. Who
else was snubbed? There was, I mean, a big surprise was, I mean,
oh,
so
my biggest snub. I have a snub.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Dean.
Yeah, go ahead. Dean.
The biggest snub to me is Andrew Garfield for the Fifth Network. I think that was just something that. Actually, when I read the things, I was just blown away that he wasn't in it. He wasn't.
That was shocked. Yeah. What about Julianne Moore for The Kids
Are
All Right?
I was I didn't think that it was deserved that she got snubbed, but I was expecting it because I expected that that Annette Bening would get it instead. You know, it's been such a strong year for actresses that there was no way that there was going to be two nominations from the same movie this year. And speaking of that, let me say something about an inclusion that I thought was really great, and that is Michelle Williams for Blue Valentine. Blue Valentine is a really terrific movie. I watched it last week, and what a terrific movie. And I really did think that she was the jewel in that movie.
Gosling, you should have nominated as well, though, because you need both of them for the movie to work. But I have to say something, Dean. A double feature of this and Revolutionary Road, you'd never want to get married, and you'd want to go home and turn the gas on. You want to go home and turn the gas on in your house.
This is true. Definitely.
Not exactly the feel-good movie of the year.
Yeah.
What pain.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling was probably brushed aside for Javier Bardem. I think so. It's a great nomination, though. I mean,
it is.
In a year of just, you know, two or three at most surprises. That Javier Bardem nomination, you know, I think it's only like I don't know how many foreign language performances have been nominated in the best in an acting category.
Well, isn't that because of Julia Roberts is like campaigning very hard for him this year, as she did for Denzel Washington in Training Day? She really went around. She really insisted to everyone that he get nominated for this.
Yeah, Roberto Benigni was the last one, right?
I think it was.
I think there's been some others since then, but
Catherine Deneuve for Indochine.
That was in '93,
exactly.
Though.
Yeah.
Well,
aren't you impressed though
that
I came up with Catherine Deneuve in Indochine?
I am. When are we going to interview her?
What?
When are we going to interview her, and will I be allowed on the show to interview her? If you participate in that.
But,
anyway,
okay.
Another snub for me this year has been also Leslie Manville for
that's
best
a big, yeah,
actress
that's a big
or supporting actress for another year. I was glad to see that Mike Lee made it for his you know perennial nomination as an original screenplay writer, but I was really surprised that Leslie Manville was left off of either one of those, you know, award lists, either actress or supporting actress. So that was another one of the big snubs for me.
Well, and John Hawkes getting nominated for Best Supporting.
That was a surprise, yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence, I'm glad. Jennifer Lawrence probably took, I hate to say that.
Yeah, I don't
Jennifer
know. I don't
Lawrence
know
made it
know.
Into Best Actress, you know, so
it
that's
depends.
Great.
You know, it's very interesting. There's a complaint that Hallie Stanfield should have been for actress because she's in every scene of the movie and not supporting. You know, you have that going on. And
well, that just goes into that traditional sort of Oscar thing of like, you know, like when there's a newcomer coming on. Like, I always like to point to 1980 with Timothy Hutton being winning the supporting actor Oscar for Ordinary People when he was in every single scene from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie. Well, he wasn't really the supporting player in that movie, but the reason that he was put in there was because it could be a couple of reasons. There's a couple of reasons. There's a reason of like who does the. It doesn't really work with. This doesn't really work with Timothy Hutton because he's the character that does change throughout the entire movie. But with Hailee Steinfeld, is it her character that's really the arc of the movie? I mean, does she really change throughout the entire movie? She probably doesn't. From what I remember from the
She drives the movie. I mean, she gives the movie the reason for being.
Yeah, it really does.
That's all you need. And she is the lead actress in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Just like
mm-hmm.
Philip Seymour Hoffman was the lead actor in Doubt, and yet he got nominated for Best
Supporting. That's true.
Yes, Yeah. So sometimes, yeah, it's very weird about the actor and supporting actor thing. Like, you know, this is just another signpost of the problems that are involved with, you know, determining who's supporting it and who's lead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a problem that, like, bespeaks, like, to a couple of things. How well-known the actor is, how what the character does in the movie, whether the character is the one that changes throughout the movie, and also whether those are the two big ones. You know, those are the two big ones.
You really couldn't finish that thought, could you? You really couldn't finish that.
No,
you couldn't bring that to completion.
No, the train derailed. So
the train did derail.
Dean likes to talk so much that he'll talk and not have any idea what he's going to say. Or what he's saying.
I actually, though, there are some things that you know, the other big snub they're talking about is Tangled in the animation category. And that's the only, because they only nominate three films. There was a lot of good animated films this year, but I was happy to see The Illusionist up there, even though I haven't seen it. It looks fascinating, but I was happy to see that up there. But the other thing I was happy about, though, was
that's true,
Jackie
Tangled
Weaver.
Did get, yeah.
Jackie Weaver
true.
Getting nominated.
Yeah.
That was great. That was wonderful.
Look, this is a rare year where there's a flurry of great female performances
mm-hmm.
to go around. You know,
mm-hmm.
It happens. You know, every now and then, and,
mm-hmm.
and some years it's a drought. But
mm-hmm.
Last year was pretty darn good for female.
Well, here's the thing,
actors.
All four acting categories, all four. Every performance is great. I mean, you can't. There's not a complaint against any of those performances.
No,
they're all.
So you
right.
don't think you
top
don't think
top.
Jeff Bridges is in there because he won last year and people like him?
You think? I think people. Well, better that than Tron Legacy. You know.
I think that Jeff Bridges deserves every Academy Award nomination that he could possibly get.
I love him. I love him too. I think he's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think he erases like any memory of John Wayne, which. A memory of John Wayne and True Grit is really just the memory of John Wayne. Just the
right.
memory of
and
John Wayne in any movie.
That's a pretty amazing thing to overcome. You're right, Jamie. That's a pretty amazing thing to overcome, is to overcome the image of an Oscar-winning performance by the main movie star that we can all name throughout the entire world. And so, like, yeah.
But
yeah,
I don't think there's anything specific about that performance in True Grit that people are reminiscent of. I think it's just John Wayne in general. I mean, John Wayne's charisma, his
mm-hmm.
his persona. So for Jeff Bridges to completely kind of work against that, you know, and he plays a character that's so kind of gruff.
Mm-hmm.
That it could fall into caricature.
True.
You know, with that voice and the weary and just kind of lugging around and but he doesn't. I mean, he doesn't do it. It's a true performance, as you'd expect from Jeff Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And same with Matt Damon. Like, especially with that tongue injury that
mm-hmm.
he suffers in True Grit,
mm-hmm.
it could have been real cartoonish. But,
he was very good, and like you said, there's so many great performances. You know, they couldn't fit him in there, but I would have loved to have seen him get a supporting nod. But it's just like you said,
Barry Pepper is awesome.
Barry Pepper's very good in that.
Great supporting
hey.
Performance, yeah.
Hey, Janie, I wanted to ask you: were you really disappointed in the fact that The Town wasn't nominated for
yes.
more?
That's a big disappointment, because it's such a good movie. I mean,
it is. It's a very good movie.
Well, two of our favorites were nominated this year, and when I say our favorites, I mean Movie Geeks United, because I mean we had Jeremy Renner on near the very beginning of our show.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the Phil Donahue show, the Phil Donahue interview that we did. He came on after Phil Donahue
mm-hmm.
one night. For a movie called Neo Ned, and he had already
That's
done
right.
Dahmer. He wasn't like a megastar yet, and then he came on again for his nomination for The Hurt Locker, and now we're requesting again for The Town. So he got nominated. Jennifer Lawrence,
mm-hmm.
because they offered Inarritu, or is that the director of The Burning Plain? I forget.
I think one of those. I think him. Or usually it's the, yeah. I think you're right. Yeah.
Anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so they offered him, and I said, "What I'd really like to talk to is Jennifer Lawrence," and so they got her. So we had her on the cusp too. So I mean, I feel great because I think both of them are so fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But the town, not to be one of the ten. I mean, what would I take off from the ten to make room for the town? I don't know.
Winter's Bone.
I haven't seen
I think Winter's Bone took the town's place, and I think the reason that Winter's Bone did that is because it's still a movie in contention right now and in people's conversations, even though it was the only movie out of the 10 that was released in the spring. So it's a spring movie that has, in fact, a Sundance movie, that has still remained in everybody's minds.
Mm-hmm.
For both Jennifer Lawrence, Deborah Granick, the writer-director, who was the co-writer and director, and also for John Hawke. I mean, people were talking about John Hawke as being sort of a I go to incontention.com, Chris Tapley's site. That's where I go to, like, keep in contact with, like, what's going on in the award circuit. And also Awards Daily, Sasha Stone's site. But
She's great. Her site's great.
I like Sasha Stone a lot, but I like Chris Tapley's site as well. But anyway, they both highlighted John Hawke as somebody that should be nominated and everything. And when you really look at that movie, you know, he's really terrific in it. I mean, I'm not sure that the movie would have the same sense of menace and suspense in it if John Hawke weren't in there.
Chris in the chat room says that he likes the town, but he thought it was really derivative. Derivative. Is that the word? Derivative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like I'm missing a syllable in there. It was nothing groundbreaking, which I think it was. I think that and Let Me In were the two best pure genre movies of last year. And I think that in terms of if you only nominate groundbreaking movies, why would The Departed win Best Picture?
Yeah, that's
I mean, The Departed
yeah,
the part like is
a
monster.
Yes.
Yeah, I think The Town
should
have been on
there, man. Yeah, I mean, The Town is a really great, great genre movie, and I think that it gets lifted up from the genre movie thing into a more personal sort of character sort of movie in its last 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But especially in its last 30 minutes and especially in its last 10 minutes. But I think that The Town probably didn't make it in because it just didn't have, I mean, if you're going to nominate The Town, like, what else is it going to be nominated for? You know, I mean, what else can it make it in? You know, it wasn't going to make it in into screenplay or director. It wasn't, you know, it made it into an acting category. It wasn't going to make it into...
It got a Writers Guild nomination, didn't it?
Yeah, but that's because the Writers Guild threw out all those other things that should have been nominated in those categories, but were excluded because they weren't Writers Guild. The writers weren't Writers Guild members. Like Winter's Bone couldn't be nominated for a Writers Guild award, and so forth and so on. You know, Toy Story 3.
Wait, they couldn't. Now, what was it? You said because they're not Writers Guild members.
Yeah, there were a lot of in the Writers Guild Awards. There were a lot of movies that were excluded being nominated, including The King's Speech, including Winter's Bone and Toy Story 3. They were all excluded, and another year and a couple of other things.
Okay, wait, Dean. Were they excluded because the people who wrote them were not members of the Writers Guild?
Yes.
That's a great thing. I'm so glad to see that people are able who are not in the guilds get something made because you don't know how hard that is to do that. That's amazing. That's incredible.
So that's
astounding.
That's why, like, movies that were surprising, like I Love You, Philip Morris, And Please Give actually made it into the Writers Guild nominations. It's because they were big surprises, but they weren't surprises when you looked at the list of the movies that were eligible for the awards that the Writers Guild were giving out. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the list that's available, you know, like this guy that wrote he's not part of the Writers Guild, so he didn't get a nomination in the original screenplay category.
Wow.
You know?
Hey, that's
so interesting. I mean, you know, this has been going on for a long time, you know, still to this day. Quentin Tarantino is not part of the Writers Guild. He refuses to be part of the Writers Guild, so he'll never be nominated.
Right, no,
as
no,
long
no.
as he's
Yeah, no, the reason I say that is because, like, you know, in order to get into the Writers Guild,
I'm eating a fortune cookie,
script,
by the way.
That's fine. That's cool, and I hope it's a good fortune. It's a really good fortune. But no,
it
my brother
loud.
Tried to get into the Writers Guild, and but the only way you could get in, I don't is if you sell a script. If you don't sell a script, you obviously can't get in. So I'm really
happy. Well, isn't that nice? Isn't that nice that, you know, you don't necessarily have to be part of the Writers Guild to
be
nominated for an Oscar?
I think that's probably the greatest thing I've heard in the last couple of years. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice.
You want to know what my fortune is, speaking of writers?
Yeah, let's hear it.
I wonder if struggling screenwriters get paid to write fortune cookies.
I'm sure there's a movie debating to be made about that.
Do not see if this applies to my current situation. Do not desire what you do not need.
I think that's true for all three of us.
I think that's very good. The deal should be, it should just say, do not desire. It's best not to desire anything. If you
desire dear God, Dean. What an awful way to live.
No, Dean,
that's
not
like something like a retarded Tyler Durden would say.
Dude, let me tell you, that is what the Buddhists believe. The Buddhists believe not to desire anything, to eliminate desire from your life, because it doesn't mean to eliminate.
But I like
hope.
What the Buddha says it better. It's like the Dalai Lama says it a lot better than you do. So, I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm shaped like a Buddha, but I don't live.
Oh, no, you're
that.
Not. Stop
and
that.
Plus, you know.
You have a clock in your stomach.
How do you
that's
know you're
I'm
alive
asking.
If you don't desire anything?
Yeah, really. I mean, you're just like PhD 1138. I mean.
Yeah, but you're not. Hold on. I'm not saying, and nobody is saying to
How
eliminate.
How do you dream if you have no desire?
Hold
you're like
on
one of the
minute.
Pod people.
Hold on. We're not saying eliminate hope. Keep hope alive.
Martin Luther King Day was last week.
I wish Chris would call in.
Keep hope alive. Hope is always there, but desire is something that actually has a sort of dark tinge to it. You know, it has this dark tinge to it. You have this desire for something. If you don't get it, everything is going to fall down around you.
I love this.
You know?
I love this. I wish I had like a Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy kind of theme music.
for
deep
Jack
life
Handy.
Lessons.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Great. You're a regular old Jack Handy there, Dean. Oh, my God.
Let me bring up.
Emphasis on the hand part. What?
Getting back to the Oscar snubs.
Oh,
let
yeah.
me name my number one Oscar snub of the entire nomination list.
Oh my God.
Okay.
The number one Oscar snub, and this I'm not even gonna bring up Greenberg and my favorite movies of the year and stuff like that. But the number one Oscar snub of the entire thing is how in the fuck did Lee Smith not get nominated for best editing for Inception?
That's actually a very good point.
Inception is all over these other categories: art direction, cinematography,
right.
sound effects. It's in score. And somehow it does not get a Best Film Editing nomination. We've got Black Swan, The Fighter, The King's Speech, 127 Hours, and The Social Network. And
well, they're
no,
all deserving. Although that's the thing, is they're all really, all the films you mentioned are all deserving of that, I think.
Well,
even 127 Hours, I think.
127 Hours stinks.
Dean, I'd like to see you in 127 Hours.
But 127 hours told a story that was like from A to B, and then it was over. Okay, here you have Inception that tells 15 different stories on top of each other, cutting back and forth between different time periods, different time elements going on in it, different action elements going on in it. It absolutely astounds me that Lee Smith for Inception is not in the running for best.
That's a good snub. Would you have preferred 127 hours if James Franco had cut off another appendage instead?
No, I would have preferred it if it hadn't ever been made.
Jesus Christ.
Between a rock and a soft place.
I think 127 hours is one of the worst movies of the year.
Wow.
Yes.
So, also best makeup.
You didn't see the Saw movie, or you didn't see that then, or you didn't see.
It was about as bad as Kick-Ass was, or you know, MacGruber. Yeah, I mean, MacGruber at least had a couple of laughs in it.
Not
Alice in Wonderland, best
tonight.
Makeup. Dear God. Alice in Wonderland, best makeup, didn't get nominated.
Yeah, but Barney's version got in there.
Yeah, that's the only nomination Barney's version got. That's great. Which I expected. I mean, I knew it wasn't going
to be nominated. What got, besides Barney's version, what else got makeup?
The Way Back.
I need to go see that, man.
And the Wolfman. Rick Baker, who will win another Oscar this year.
Yeah. Could be. I guess. I mean, we've seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, but it's
never
been
on. We've seen everything before.
That's true.
Anyway, you know what's...
Okay, go ahead.
You know what's interesting about the Oscars this year? A record number of nominations have resulted from Sundance premieres this year.
Great segue.
Is that true? Really?
Something like 14 major nominations
have resulted
from Sundance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We got Blue Valentine, Winner's Bone. What else?
The Kids Are All Right.
Yeah,
the documentary work, I'm sure, was represented.
Mm-hmm. The documentaries were there.
Oh, sure. Restrepo must have been one of those.
That's interesting. So Sundance is, I mean, I got to tell you, this year sounds like so much fun, especially Sunday night when we were all on Kevin Smith with his Red State maneuver there. That was quite still, you know, it's really interesting. At first, everyone was like seeing how great it was, and then all of a sudden it was like Monday morning, everyone was like, no, he's really backstabbed the whole entire independent film community.
So let me tell the story
for the listeners out there that might not know.
Yeah, deal on that.
Please.
I don't know that story. What's going on?
So Kevin Smith has been promoting his premiere of Red State, which is his new kind of satirical, religious-tinged horror film. And he's been touting the premiere at Sundance, and he's been saying, look, I'm going to auction off the distribution of the film at the screening. Which inspired all of the distributing distribution reps, to show up at the screening.
Mm-hmm.
He opened the screening, apparently, by going on a 15-minute diatribe where he basically insulted all the distribution reps.
Yeah, well, it's like inviting everyone to dinner and then insulting your guests, basically.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
The screening ended. He went on and on and on, a big, like, half-hour to-do.
It was, like, 25 minutes, I think.
Where he eventually said, okay, he pulled out a $20 bill, paid himself $20, and he says, I'm going to self-distribute, which was a big slap in the face. It made everyone cry, a publicity stunt.
Mm-hmm. Which he's good at.
Yeah, that he wasn't a man of his word. And then he insulted everyone there. And the distribution reps were like, look, we could have actually gone to see movies that needed help, where people actually wanted to be picked up during this time instead of wasting it here. He also announced that his next movie
will be
his last one. And
the
then he'll retire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then he'll retire
now,
after that one.
His next movie will be his last movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what brought that on?
Well, no, he's been talking about that. A lot of people thought Zach and Marie was going to be his last movie because he entered a major depression because that did not do well.
He needs to grow the hell up. You know what?
Well, you know, go ahead. I have something to say, but go ahead.
I mean, I don't believe that he'll I don't know. If he stops making movies, it's not a loss to me, certainly. But
no.
If he doesn't have the passion to make movies, which I don't feel like he has for a long time, I think he had a passion to break in and see what he could do with it. It never seemed like a passion to stick to it and get better. So if he doesn't have a passion to make movies, he shouldn't be making movies. I mean, that's as simple as that. And if he has such a thin skin where he gets bad critical reception for a movie that completely deserved the reception it got, Cop Out, but he has to throw tantrums like this.
This is a big tantrum, it seems.
Then he doesn't need to be in the business. He doesn't need to be making movies.
Well, famous line was he always used to joke about this, but then it looked like it was for real. He said, I broke into the film business really to break into the comic book business. And, you know, because remember he went through periods where he would do write and comics. And it did seem like that's what he wanted to do for the longest time. But, you know, he's really become the first director to make himself a major internet presence. And, you know, that's what he's interested in. He has all the podcasts and everything he does, and I think he's more interested in that than making movies, to be honest with you.
Okay, so let me say something. I have to say something about Kevin Smith that I've always wanted to say.
Oh, God.
Say it right now, and this is it. Kevin Smith was never a good filmmaker. He never was, and I'm not including Red State in this, okay? Because I have something to say about Red State as well, at least as far as what I've looked at of it. Kevin Smith has never, never demonstrated an ability to make a movie.
You don't even think Jason Amy is a...
I don't think that any of his movies... I think that every single one of his movies, with the exception of the obvious ones like Jay and Silent Bob and all that stuff, or Dogma even, I think that most of his movies would work better as stage plays, especially something like Clerks or... whatever. You know, like, I think that they're more dialogue-driven. I don't think that he has a visual sense of what movies can give us. And so I think that this whole thing with him getting involved in movies is exactly as Jamie frames it. He just wanted to know if he could do it, and he did it, and he found a way to do it, and now he's more interested in other things. I think he's more interested in going on speech tours and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a
and
lot
he's
of,
great
he's
at that.
A,
yeah, he's very good.
He's got a... He's got a lot of stuff going on, no question about it. But I don't think that his movies are anything to sneeze at. I like about half of Clerks, and really, since then, it's been a big zero for me.
Okay.
For me, a big zero. Now, that said, running into the preview for that's been provided online for Red State, like, this is a fucking Kevin Smith movie? I can't believe it. It actually looks like a movie that has good shots in it,
mm-hmm.
that has good cinematography, that has crazy actors in it and stuff like that, and it looks like it's been done with some kind of vision to it. I have to say,
I like Jersey Girl.
I would like to say when you guys are done, or when you're done, Dean, I'd like to say something.
I'm done, but I mean, I just want to say I'm very excited about Red State, and I never thought in a million years that I would say that I was excited about the release of a
Kevin Smith movie.
But I'm very excited about Red State, and I think it's going to be something.
Gotcha.
Something
understand.
To look at.
Wow. Okay, I mean, I like Kevin Smith a lot, and I guess I'm a little bit younger than you, Dean. I know I'm an old man and everything, but I'm younger than you. And I like Kevin Smith. I like what he did with Clerks. I like Mallrats. I think Chasing Amy is great. Dogma. And Jay and Silent Bob, they're very, but here's the thing, the movies are, and especially Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, they're inside jokes. He really made that one. His movies he really makes specifically for his fans. Now, whether you agree with that or not, if that's smart or not, that's debatable. When he does, every time he's tried to go outside of that Jersey Girl or even to Zach and Marie, where he really tried to be like Judd Apatow, he doesn't do too well. Clerks 2, he really, even though he said he wouldn't go back to that, and there's now, if you look at his Twitter feed today, he's talking about Clerks 3, although he probably won't, he'll never do that. He's tempted to.
How can he retire if he doesn't?
Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah, no, he's not going to do that. I think he ended that storyline where he wanted. I think his films are dialogue heavy. It's what he enjoys, and you know what the film that inspired him to become a filmmaker, don't you?
Yeah.
No.
Linklater's Slacker.
Right.
Slacker is the film that made him decide that he could do this.
But the guy who made Slacker went on to make Before Sunset and all that stuff. He actually grew as a filmmaker, actually became a mm-hmm. visual stylist in a lot of ways. And Kevin Smith has not grown one iota compared to Richard Linklater.
Well, he's grown, just not as a filmmaker.
Oh God! Oh my God! Well, we're not getting Kevin Smith on the show anytime soon. Oh God, Dean, your laugh scares me.
Good stuff.
Okay.
It's like Blofeld getting hit by a truck.
So
Roberts likes my laugh. That's all
what?
I have to say. Julia Roberts likes my laugh. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Let's watch her campaign for it for best actor.
Yeah, really.
All right. So the other Sundance screenings, you know, I'm heartbroken. Pacino's new movie, which he has a supporting role in. It's the new movie from the director of The Guide to Recognizing Your Saints, which
mm-hmm.
was a big Sundance.
I like that. I like that movie a lot.
It's called Son of No One.
Oh yeah, that's right. This did not go over well.
No, apparently. It's the closing night film of the festival, so it hasn't played yet for a general audience,
mm-hmm.
but critics were there with various studio reps, and there were walkouts. I mean, people didn't like this movie at all. And it's Pacino, Ray Liotta, Channing Tatum, Katie Holmes, gritty cop thriller.
Yeah.
And apparently it was awful.
Wow, that's sad.
Yeah. So they said that's the first official bomb of Sundance.
Yeah,
and yet,
I read that on the wrap, yeah.
Mm.
Yet he says he's got three offers to purchase it in this negative press, which the producer says is not true.
Right.
That there was a projector problem. It's always good. Which is always good. If you don't know if a movie's bad or if it's just a projector problem.
How many times
does that happen to you?
All the time. Every day of my life. Now, one of the movies I'm following actually turned out to have a very good... It was My Idiot Brother, and there was some confusion after the screening of that because I think people were expecting it like a laugh-out-loud comedy, and it's much more heartfelt is the word that's being used to describe it. But the Weinsteins, after bidding with Relativity, finally got it. But the Q&A session from that was supposed to be just the weirdest Q&A session. No one asked questions related to the movie whatsoever. They asked Paul, a woman asked Paul Rudd, will you become an animal activist? Then someone asked Emily Mortimer this question that went on and on forever and had no idea what he was talking about, but he's saying, like, how do you get out of character, essentially? And she was just like, could you repeat the question? And I got the biggest laugh of the night. And then someone at the EW said got more laughs than the actual movie, which I did not find encouraging. But I do want to, that's the movie. That's of all the movies.
Paul Rudd,
Zooey Deschanel. Who else? Elizabeth Banks, Emily Mortimer, Adam Scott.
Who directed
Jones.
It?
The gentleman who did The X. Remember that Jason Bateman,
right.
Zach Braff movie, which is so-so. But this got the dream cast.
Hobo with a Shotgun just played.
Oh, how did that go?
They said it's great fun. It's like
the
perfect midnight movie, which I suppose you'd want from a movie like that.
Well,
now,
that's what I look for.
That's taken from one of the Grindhouse trailers.
Yeah, and we interviewed Rutger Hauer.
And he is the hobo with a shotgun in it. So, yeah.
One of the great interviews.
By me. Oh, my God. I was terrified of that interview. He was a scary dude.
Thank God he was in Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's the genesis of this movie?
It's one of the Grindhouse movies, like Machete. Like Machete, it's one of the Grindhouse films.
It was part of that thing? I don't remember.
No, it wasn't. It was someone did make a trailer for it, though. Not with the movie, but I do think there was someone made a trailer afterwards.
Uh-huh.
And it, like Machete, it's got a full... They made it into a movie, so...
Well, I'm still waiting for Don't, you know? I'm still waiting for Edgar Wright's Don't.
You'll be waiting for a long time.
Well, don't wait. Other screenings, there's a film, I'm trying to look up the title now, Tobey Maguire.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Weinstein's picked it up for something like $8 million.
$8 million? Wow, okay.
Yeah. The Weinsteins have purchased quite a bit.
Dude, this is his... they're back. I mean, with the King's Speech and everything, they're back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a quirky comedy. It's he and Elizabeth Banks.
God, she's really, the next 3 days really didn't do anything for anybody, so it's good to see she's going back to comedy.
There's a movie called The Woods that was partially funds were raised on some website that raises money for independent films. Like
mm-hmm.
they got people to donate tens of thousands of dollars so they could complete it through this website, just regular internet users. That played there, and I believe that's already been picked up.
Uh-huh.
There's with Brendan Gleeson, The Guard.
Right.
That
Don Cheadle, Brendan Gleeson, yeah.
Yeah, that looks pretty good.
That's from the writer of the Colin Farrell movie you like.
Yeah, I know, in Bruges, yeah. It's from.
That's
yeah.
For in Bruges. Oh, wow. So is he directing it as well?
Yeah, famed playwright, yeah.
Oh, he directed it. Okay, cool. No, that's great.
McDonough, yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good to know.
I'm waiting for my pages to load so I can tell you the other movies that are showing.
Okay.
I have, by the way, I wanted to, chime in on something. I know that one of Jerry's, this is off subject, but I know one of Jerry's favorite movies of the year was Easy A.
Yeah.
And I have to wholeheartedly agree with you on that.
Wow.
I had to change my, I even went back and changed my top movies of the year on Filmic Ability to include Easy A. And Blue Valentine as well. But Easy A, I'm telling you, boy, what an actress Emma Stone is.
Mm-hmm.
What a great new presence in film, I think. I hope, at least. You know, I was saying the same thing about Alicia Silverstone, but...
But Emma Stone's been building up to this over the years, like in Superbad and Zombieland and The House.
Is it just me, or Alicia Silverstone always looked like she didn't bathe? She wasn't quite clean.
What?
Does she always look like that to me?
I think you're confusing her with the character she played in Excess Baggage because she was in the trunk of the car. I think
she's like almost like a prettier Courtney Love. But
wow.
I don't see that at all.
But the same amount of
that.
Like grime.
No. No. I think that's just you.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to insult your masturbatory fantasies, Dean.
I love Alicia Silverstone. I think she's the best, and I wish that she would get back into movies. But I think she's more into animal issues, like saving the animals and stuff, you know. So that's good. But and I think she's happy with her new family and everything.
Are you just hoping she saves you? Is that what you're
I'd like to be one of the animals that she saves.
Documentaries.
We didn't even have to go there. You went there for us.
There's a documentary that played. There's several documentaries that played at Sundance, but one of the big ones actually airs on HBO. It's already been picked up. It's called Bobby Fischer Against the World, and it tells the story of Bobby Fischer, obviously. Which is a fascinating story. I'd love to see that movie. There's also There's also a documentary on a year at the New York Times, and it hasn't been received very well. They say it's kind of a squandered opportunity to show the changing times in the newspaper business through the prism of the New York Times that they don't fully capitalize on, which is too bad. Yeah, it's a good idea for a documentary.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Mm-hmm. There's a movie called Take Shelter, which they say is a real great, tightly wound Polanski-style thriller.
Michael Shannon one?
Yeah, Michael Shannon is in the lead of it, and he's a little quirky to begin with. They say it's a very effective movie. They say that a movie called Salvation Boulevard, which has a big cast with Pierce Brosnan and Greg Kinnear and Jim Conley.
Yeah, I want to see that. Yeah.
They say that doesn't work.
Oh, really? Okay. Wow.
Yeah, and I'm going through the New York the Hollywood Reporter reviews.
Okay.
Becoming Chaz, which is a movie that we covered during our Sundance series that we aired on Sunday, which is the documentary about Chastity Bono's gender transformation. They say is very good, and that premieres on Oprah Winfrey's own network in May. You guys watch that, by the way?
Is that actually going to get a theatrical release or something?
It's premiering on television, so I don't think so.
I want to see Uncle Kent. That's on demand, Sundance on demand. I want to check that out, Uncle Kent.
I haven't read anything about Uncle Kent.
I'd like to see it.
Vera Farmiga's new movie, she directed it and acts in it, is called Higher Ground, about born-again Christians, and they say it's really good, and they say it's very respectful of the born-again experience, which is odd.
Wow, that sounds good. That sounds like a really good subject.
They also talk about Morgan Spurlock's new documentary, The Greatest Movie Ever Sold.
I hate that guy.
And they say it's one of the funniest documentaries you'll ever see. It's a movie that is about product placement, and it's entirely funded by product placement.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that guy. I despise
that
guy.
What did he do? Did he, like, piss on your toilet seat or something? I mean, why don't you like him?
I have some inside information. Let's just put it that way.
Okay. And then probably the most acclaimed documentary that played at Sundance thus far this year is Reagan, a movie about Ronald Reagan.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say
about it. What does it talk about in relation to what period of his life, or is it his whole life? Or
I think it's kind of a sweeping movie about his life.
That'd be very interesting. I would be very curious to see that.
They say it's very fair about accomplishments and downfalls. You know, it's but they say it's meticulous and just a great classic American story that's very fair-minded.
Mm.
So that's the big buzz out of Sundance about documentaries.
Well, completely change the subject, but there was some interesting movie news this week that Keanu Reeves dropped that there's going to be a Matrix 4 and 5.
And then he recanted. I mean, he said, look, I was credited as saying that during some kind of speech I was supposedly giving in England. I wasn't even in England. And I haven't heard anything about a 3D Matrix 4 and 5.
Wow, who the hell fabricates something?
who's able to get it out that fast and reputable?
Come on, we live in the age where
everyone's
thrown out there very quickly.
And it's like, that's good, because I was like, why the hell would you want to even try to go back to that?
See, that's the work of some asshole who wants to get a scoop, you know. That's the work of some asshole who wants to get a scoop.
We could get a scoop on Morgan Spurlock here, and we're not getting it. I have insider information, but I'm not going to share it. Jesus Christ, Dean.
I have some friends that know Morgan Spurlock and have dealt with him in the past. And
what are you, Barbara Streisand? You're people who know people? I mean, come on. I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact,
it's somebody who's involved in, I'm not even going to give you any more things.
Because you're just going to go down a slippery slope, my friend. Just stop. You don't want to give the insider information. Just stop.
Yes. Well, I have inside information about Suzanne Bleschet, but for the right price, I'll give it to you.
I love Suzanne Bleschet.
Yeah, well, that's I don't, I'm not interested in your necrophiliac dreams, Dean, okay?
So what other movie news has occurred this week? Outside
well,
of Sundance.
Let's see. What. let's see. That's really that, – I mean, Sundance and the Oscars is a big story this week. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, how much bigger can you get than that?
Yeah.
Did you know that Ridley Scott's next movie it's no longer an Alien prequel. It's the same project, but it's no longer considered part of the Alien franchise.
It's Prometheus,
what?
Right?
Yeah,
and
which was originally going to be an Alien prequel, but now it's not.
Isn't it better that way, though? Isn't it? I'm just glad to see them leave Alien alone altogether. I mean,
it is a franchise that's suffered enough blows. But this completely like blows me away. This hearing this news, so it's just going to be a space movie. Okay, all right, good.
It's got a reported budget of $250 million.
Jesus Christ, man! I could pay off some debts with that.
Doesn't it need to be an alien movie
with that kind of money?
Yeah.
With that
doesn't
kind
it need
of money?
To be like, you know, like a Star Wars slash Alien slash
like
Indiana
alien,
Jones movie
alien
to be?
Versus Predators versus the Thing from Splice versus the Thing. I mean, versus Freddy versus Jason with that kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not
yeah,
sure what the thought process is behind distancing it from Alien. I mean, if it's going to be a prequel reboot kind of project, which for that amount of money, why would you spend that amount of money on something you don't want to make a franchise?
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
I don't understand why they did that, but maybe it's good in the long run for the franchise and for the movie itself, because
mm-hmm.
Connecting it to perhaps he got to a point where connecting, because we all have to own up to the fact that doing an Alien prequel leads you to the thing of like, well, how are you going to do it? Like, well, what is the connection? You know, like, what? You know,
it'll be
how
that
are you
ship,
going to do it?
That ship,
yeah,
at the
what,
beginning, that first, that where they were, you the first that huge ship with the big alien in it. I guess
yeah.
is where it would revolve around that. I would think.
But maybe they just got to, maybe he just got to a point where he was just getting too far away from that, and he
mm-hmm.
said, oh, it's got to be a whole separate other movie, because it just. You know, to me, doing an Alien prequel would create a thing that I think would be quite tenuous to the original Alien, and so maybe he just got to a point where he said it's too tenuous now, so we've got to make it into a separate movie, which is, in a way, obviously a pretty brave choice, and
mm-hmm.
makes me wonder about the quality of the movie. He must actually have some pretty high opinions of the movie's story to even do that. So,
well, maybe it's another visionary kind of sci-fi movie like Blade Runner, which was
yeah.
a failure upon its release.
Yeah.
No, I think you might be right, Jamie.
But you don't want a $250 million failure.
No.
And usually numbers are inflated as a movie is being shot or when it's being promoted. I mean,
you would think after Robin Hood, he'd be careful about such an expensive gamble. And that
well,
is expensive
I don't know.
Gamble.
It's been a little while since he's had a hit. I mean, he did a good year, and he did
American Gangster was a big hit for him. That made a lot of money.
Yeah, was it? Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, that's like
and I don't know how well Robin Hood did overseas. I don't know how well that story did overseas.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. Still, that's a lot of money for. I don't care what the movie is. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well,
Dark,
it's a big risk.
Dark Tower. Ron Howard's doing the Dark Tower, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and he's talking about doing it as a series of films and as a TV miniseries to include every bit of stuff from the series of Stephen King books.
I think they should do it like what HBO is doing with Game of Thrones. I think they should do each book as like a 8 or 9 part miniseries. That's the only way you're going to really do justice to the books. I think doing a feature film is not the smartest thing in the world.
I don't know. It's a huge investment, and especially for a cast, it's a huge investment of time.
Yeah.
But I guess there are so, as there are in Stephen King books, there are a lot of ancillary characters that are kind of deliciously drawn in
right.
the book that they want to include. So they want to expand it into the TV miniseries.
Right.
They're talking about Javier Bardem. They're talking about Christian Bale, Viggo Mortensen.
All great actors for that project. Really, really, they're all. I think I could see each of those in there.
Any Stephen King books that you'd like to see translated into film that haven't been yet? I mean, are there any left?
Well, no, there are. There's a lot of stuff. I mean, Gerald's Game was never made into a movie unless or a miniseries unless I'm mistaken.
Gerald's Game, wow. I haven't thought of that. Man, I could not have come up with that. But I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's not, you'd have to really, there are books. I mean, I've read, it's interesting, I go through phases where I read a lot of King and then I don't. And I'm in one of those, I still, like, I have a copy of Under the Dome. I'd really like to read that. But that's a big investment right there. I wouldn't mind. I'm surprised that I'm sure someone's making that into a movie. And, you know, there's all these short stories that you know, that you want to, that could be made that haven't been made yet. I'd be very curious to see someone else, like maybe things that have been made in the movies and someone else a different take. I wouldn't mind seeing someone do another variation on, you know, I guess it would be a remake, but Pet Sematary or Firestarter, movies that, you know, Firestarter especially, which wasn't a great movie, unless I'm missing something.
Yeah, I mean, very few of them are great.
Right.
In the horror genre, at least.
Yeah. No, there's a couple. I mean,
I'm going for a remake of Maximum Overdrive. I want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it was talked to for a long time that De Palma would do Paranormal Activity 2, and he never even confirmed that he was considering it. And then The Untouchables fell apart, and I know he's doing the one that we discussed earlier, but another one has just been announced for De Palma.
What's been announced? Which one?
And it's called Love Crime, and it's a remake of a movie. I guess it was a French movie, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen Scott Thomas was in it. Narrative centers on a nasty competition between an older female executive and her protege. De Palma says about remaking this, "Not since Dress to Kill have I had a chance to combine eroticism, suspense, mystery, and murder into one spellbinding cinematic experience."
Oh, well, this should be very exciting. Oh, I look forward to that. Oh, my God.
So where
well,
does that leave
else?
Toyer?
What else?
I thought he was doing Toyer.
I'm glad to see he's keeping busy. That's a good question, Jamie, because Toyer was the one that I thought he was working on next. Or is this what Toyer is becoming?
It's a $30 million production, and they're talking about it getting underway in August.
Wow.
So I don't know. I mean, he can't be doing Toyer. Maybe he can. Maybe he can.
He can do whatever he wants. I mean.
All right.
So
is anything else happening? Do we
No, I think we covered everything. And, you know, Sunday's the big night.
I have two movies that I want to promote.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
I watch, since we don't delve into the classics too much on this show, I would like to recommend two classics. One from 1959, it's called, it's a documentary. You can find it if you look for it, let's just put it that way. And it's called On the Bowery. It was a Oscar-nominated documentary back in 59. And it basically shows old drunks. It tells the story of a newcomer on the Bowery in New York City, in the east side of New York City, who arrives amongst all the other drunks in the Bowery at that time. And his ability, it's about his this person's story of trying to overcome being on the Bowery. It's an excellent, excellent movie. It is part of the National Registry. It was picked as part one of the 25 movies of 2004, I believe, to be preserved by the National Registry.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really something else. It's a little less than 70 minutes long, and it's really something brilliant. The other movie that I wanted to let people know about, a classic movie that I watched recently, is called Grand Slam. And it's from 1967. It was done by an Italian filmmaker whose name I don't have right here. But it's done by an Italian filmmaker. It's filmed mostly in New York City and in Rio de Janeiro during Carnival. And it tells the story. It's a heist movie, and it's one of the greatest heists. In fact, I would say that it's the greatest heist movie that's ever been made, even better than Rafifi. And
is this with Kirk Douglas?
It's with Edward G. Robinson.
Oh, okay.
Edward G. Robinson plays a retiring professor who comes to a money man played by Adolfo Celfi, who you might remember from a lot of Italian movies.
And wasn't he on Thunderball?
Yes, he was, as a matter of fact. Yes, exactly. Edward G. Robinson comes to Adolfo and says, "I have a plan for a heist. Yes, I'm a retiring professor, but I have a plan for a heist." He goes to Adolfo's selfie and then gets four guys in to perform the diamond heist. One of the guys is played by Klaus Kinski. And it's great to see Klaus Kinski and Edward G. Robinson. And then Janet Leigh is also in it. She's the female lead in it. She plays a woman who has a very special key that needs to be wrenched from her by another member of the team who's a playboy. And is a French playboy. And he comes in and tries to get the key from Janet Leigh. Anyway, it's a great, great heist movie that has been imitated a lot. But
directed Machine Gun McCain with Cassavetes,
which I don't know.
Britt Eklund, okay, and Peter Falk and Gabrielle Frazetti. God, that's quite a cast. I remember Machine Gun McCain. No, because I'm looking on his filmography right here. No, on the iPhone. Okay, folks, my power's out.
What's the director's name, Jerry?
Giuliano Montaldo.
Yeah, I'm telling you that Grand Slam is seriously everything. It's everything that you want from a heist movie and more. It really has the art direction. It has the sound. It has the use of music, the actors. Everything involved in it is perfect. It's absolutely the quintessential heist movie.
Wow.
So I'll
check it out, man.
I wanted to recommend two movies to listeners, and On the Bowery and Grand Slam.
And actually, the National Film Registry, there's a documentary at Sundance about that. Too.
Amazing Shadows or something.
That
sounds good.
You know,
watch that on demand. That's on demand, I believe.
That's been around. You know how long the National Film Registry has been around?
Since 1990 or something, right?
Yeah, 1988. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
1988.
Yeah, not too long, and they've already, you know, they've already got Thriller in there. So
I think they've got. I think they've got about 500, and I think maybe now it's up to 575 movies in the National Registry.
Yeah. All right, guys, we will be back with you guys Sunday night to do our Oscar prediction roundtable, and then we'll be back with more guests next Wednesday.
Okay, cool.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening tonight.
I wish I had special music to close up with from a movie, but we'll go to our in-title theme.
I like the theme. I think
the theme
is...
I think I'm going to sleep a lot easier tonight knowing that.
I love the theme too. Nice. It's our good buddy Michael McCormick.
Yeah, Michael McCormick's awesome, man. He's a good guy. We are very grateful to him. He's a good guy.
Here it is, guys.
All right.
Seriously, we're done now.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.